The Accidental Entrepreneur is brought to you through our affiliate relationships with the following sponsors: Digital Accelerant, the digital mobile business card that generates leads. Text the word LAW to 21,000 to get connected and learn how to get your own digital business card. And by Fetch Internet and Fetch Pro, the secure, high-speed app that eliminates the need to pay for hotspots or use public unsecure Wi-Fi. And Printify, the online, on-demand print shop for all your corporate merchandise. Be sure to visit our online store and get your own podcast merch. Listen to all of our sponsors' commercials later in this episode and follow their links in the show notes to learn more about their products and services.
And so he was looking for that solution, but he had gone to, from his experience in Italy, he had toyed around, I think is really the best way to put it, with what we call safety razors or double edge razors.
Okay.
Which is what really came after the straight razor and was in vogue, big, you know, was the razor of the day up until probably early 60s.
Is that the one that's like curved on the top? The blade goes, it's a double-sided blade.
So that's right.
I got it. Okay.
That's right.
I think that's what my son uses. Yeah.
Oh, really? Okay.
So yeah. Like Harry's, right? Don't they have a double-edged blade or something?
You could get it at, you can get them in many places. Harry's is selling cartridges. Harry's is big time. They're, you know, Harry's and Dollar Shave were credited as being the disruptors in the industry going back about 4 or 5 years ago. But all they did was come in and disrupt the price point, right? They came after Gillette and Schick and said, hey guys, there's no reason you should be paying this high price. We'll sell you the same cartridge with 5, 6, whatever blades in it.
Right.
And it'll be a lot less. And we'll deliver it to you in a subscription format, which is super convenient.
Right.
No more having.
So he must have gotten his razor somewhere else then, because I've seen that style razor.
It's available a lot of different ways, including a large number of sellers on Amazon. So yeah, so basically that's what was, hey, we want this to be, we want to celebrate men, we want to deliver these really two critical shaving parameters. We want this very close shave, and we want low to no irritation. And so we went off on a quest. I hired a design and engineering.
The information provided in these episodes is for entertainment purposes only. It is not a guarantee of success or to be construed as advice of any kind. You should always seek advice from local licensed professionals before making any decisions.
The dictionary defines an entrepreneur as a person who organizes and manages any enterprise, especially a business, usually with considerable initiative and risk. People often start a business without much choice, perhaps due to a job loss or just being dissatisfied at work, and they come up with an idea they just know can be successful. They become entrepreneurs by accident. That is to say, their success or failure happens by accident, not with intention. My name is Mitch Beinhacker. I'm a corporate attorney and a business advisor. You're listening to The Accidental Entrepreneur, my podcast about how to achieve success on purpose, not by accident. Join me along with our monthly guests where we share our knowledge and help you get a hold of your business. And now on to today's episode. Just to remind you, the podcast is produced and brought to you by my legal practice, Beinhacker Law. We provide business and estate services to entrepreneurs, inventors, and other small business owners. Whether you're just getting started or you've been operating for a long time, contact us for all your general legal needs, from contracts to client agreements, from purchasing a new location to onboarding a new partner or key employee. We draft all types of agreements and handle most business transactions. For more information about our products and services, visit BeinhackerLaw.com or you can follow our link in the show notes. Thanks for listening, and I hope you enjoyed today's interview.
Hi, my name is Todd Barrett. I'm with One Blade Inc. We are in the business of helping men take back shaving, and I'm super excited to be on the show today.
All right, Todd. We had a little technical difficulties there. It might have been my fault, but I appreciate you getting situated a little bit better so we have a good clean feed for the discussion. So welcome to the podcast. And we started talking about the fact that it's called The Accidental Entrepreneur. Everybody says that to me. Oh, well, I like the title because I kind of accidentally ended up doing X, Y, and Z, right? You were starting to say that.
Yeah, I think it's when we talk about entrepreneurial efforts, somebody comes to me now, the thing that I'm going to definitely get to pretty quickly in the discussion is this is not something that you want to come close to doing accidentally. You need to really think about what you're committing to and.
Right. Well, you know, that's why the failure rate's so high.
Oh, yeah.
You know, because people just, they have no background. They have no, I mean, you've been kind of working in this kind of industry for a long, not shaving, but I mean, in the product industry and the development industry for a long time. So
that's right.
Maybe we can, because first of all, I already told you that I'm a bad shaver. I use an electric razor. I cut my face. We're going to go through that. I'm going to be your transformation.
That's right.
Poster child. So, but let's go back a little bit. I'd like to know about your background, where you grew up, how you got into, you know, working in the different industries you did. I know your company eventually acquired Ronco that you were with before this. So maybe you can take me back a little bit and we can walk through your history.
Yeah, sure. So big impact for my overall career was really my first job out of college. That job was, it was a lot of things. It was very entrepreneurial. It was super risky. It was something that I did accidentally fall into, admittedly. It was a neighbor who was ahead of me by a few years, and she had started this business, needed help. And I was almost done with school, and it sounded like a lot of fun to me. The background is I grew up in Northern California.
Okay.
I, son of an engineer. I was famous as a kid for fixing, quote unquote, everything.
Okay.
Now so that meant I was good at taking things apart mechanical, and I was, maybe not as good at putting them back together.
I think my son's the same way.
Yeah.
You know.
So it took time. I can actually put things back together now, at least close to how they were.
Right.
But,
right.
But yes, it was, that was a huge influence for me. My dad was super mechanical. We did lots of projects. We built a boat once.
Oh yeah. So you're mechanically inclined.
Yeah. Yeah. So it was a big influence in terms of what I wanted to spend my time doing. I came out of business school. I didn't have a real dramatic, hey, I'm going to be an accountant. I'm going to go into operations, et cetera. I loved making things. And when I got into this new role right out of school, actually before I finished, it was really a contract manufacturing business. Very, very small. There was initially three of us.
Okay. So it wasn't like you went into corporate America and got some job.
No.
Okay.
My wife was a little chagrined when I said I wasn't going to the recruiting meetings that they had at school, the opportunities to meet with companies.
Oh, you were married already at this point?
I was married already.
Yeah, young. Okay.
Married fairly young, relatively speaking. And so, yeah, so we had this business. It was called Manufacturing Modes.
Okay.
And we were at the early days of what was a big trend in terms of manufacturing products over in China.
Right. So, and a contract manufacturer, somebody, they hire you to manufacture the product that they want.
So we were, we were very hardworking. We were able to get in with some bigger companies to look at projects that they were working on. Most of the time we got thrown, I would say, some of the bones, if you will, of their programs that they were working on. But
that was big enough for you guys, right?
There's big enough for us.
Yeah.
We were able to, it got us in with people like Frog Design and some of the other major, especially Northern California, product development firms that these larger companies were working with. You could have had me do that for free. I had so much fun being able to sit down with these guys that were early on in their careers. I'm trying to remember the guy. He's done a ton of stuff now with Apple. His name is David. Anyway, he's a
big design guy.
But big design guy. He's at Stanford now doing a lot of teaching there. Kelly, I think it's Dave Kelly. But basically got to learn a lot of different processes in the whole world of manufacturing. We were doing things from plastics to metals to stonework to a lot of detailed assembly work. So I started going to China back I guess it was 1988 was my first trip to China.
Okay.
And it was, those were not the, that's not like going to China now.
Right. It's a little different. 1988.
Yeah. It was a whole different, it was a completely different place. I've never seen a transformation. Plus
that was way pre internet. Like what came around early 90s. So it was it was all in its infancy.
I didn't start carrying a Motorola brick phone probably until like a couple years into that.
Yeah. Yeah. I think my first job was out of law school and I had one of those brick phones too. My dad used to have a bag phone. Remember those?
Yeah.
Huge.
Oh, yeah.
On your shoulder, you'd have to carry
it. Yeah. Mostly, you threw it in the car or whatever, but
yeah, exactly.
Mostly they just worked. They made you cool. I don't know that they worked all that well, but
no. Well, we thought it worked that well. It was everything's relative when the technology comes out. So what was your major in college?
I was a general business major with a degree, minor in econ. I started out as an accounting.
Yeah,
I started out as an accounting major and realized that that was not going to be my best suited endeavor. So general business guy, and really got into the process of coordinating, and this is still what I do. Basically, I understand the manufacturing side of things and I get the marketing side of things well. And then I love and really have a really high appreciation for the world of design. And so getting those three things, those three very, very unique aspects of what goes into getting a product successfully made and delivered to the marketplace.
Yeah.
It's a fun job. It's fun to coordinate because you've got the design guy going, it has to be this way. It won't be right unless it looks like this, works like this, has
very
these
particular
features.
Right.
The marketing guy is going, look, if I can't sell it for this amount of
doesn't
money,
doesn't matter what you're doing, right?
Yeah, it won't matter. And the manufacturing guy's going, you're both crazy, right? I can't make it for that, and I can't believe you're trying to have it. Have a curve there where it should be straight. I mean, it just, that doesn't make sense.
But you're more the 30,000 foot guy and you're coordinating everybody. You're not sitting down with AutoCAD, right? Got people doing that for you, right?
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
Right.
No. So my job is the fun part. I love being able to be out on in the factory working with those guys to solve problems. I love sitting down with the design team when we're in the early stages and then, being able to bring that marketing angle in there as well. And so it's a really a coordinated effort or it's really finding the sweet spot is what it is.
Now, do you remember, could you tell me about some products that you've worked on through your other companies, some that were flops and some that were really successful and why you think one versus the other,
Yeah. So after I left manufacturing modes, we made the Inc. 500 and had a really crazy fast, very difficult growth period for about 6 years.
Okay.
But left that business. They were continuing on to do other things and it was a good time for me to move on. I went into actually work for one of our customers in that business. And they were really strong, and I'm trying to think of the time frame, but it doesn't matter that much. It's really in the heyday of CDs, right?
Okay.
CDs were everywhere.
Right.
CD-ROMs were starting up. And
our kids probably have no ideas what CDs are.
That's right. Sure.
Well, it's funny. When I was young, CDs were just coming along. I think a friend of mine asked for CDs for his, bar mitzvah or something. My parents couldn't understand why he would want certificates of deposit for his birthday. I said, I don't think that's what he wants.
Yeah. Yeah. It's
a generational gaps.
A little too serious there.
Right.
time marches on here, but so that was a big deal at the time.
So what was that product? It was a burner product?
Yeah, no, it was actually, we just did what I called physical cases. We did storage. We did cases,
right.
Fancy
the ones that would hold
boxes,
cases, right.
Yeah, there was companies like Case Logic,
right. I remember
Laser Line. There was a number of different companies in the spot in the space. So yeah, so we were going along really well. That business was growing, and we had this basically a design concept. We had some patents around it, and so we got so caught up in really our idea, our product, you know, sort of overall concept, that we said, you know, we should do this for floppy disks. There's still a lot of floppy disks around.
Three and a quarter.
Which there were, right?
Three and a half inch, right. Five and a quarter were the big ones, right?
Yeah, they called them, I can't even remember what they called them, micro or mini or something.
Yeah, something like that, right.
Yeah, the three and a half size. The bigger ones were gone. And really the smaller ones were essentially gone. But we were so caught up in, hey, you know, what we're doing is so clever that, of course, people will agree with us and they'll still buy these things.
Yeah.
And so we spent a lot of time, a lot of money, tooled it up, made product. And I don't know that we ever sold more than 1,000 of those things, maybe 2,000.
You get blinders on at some point, right? You think you're in the market and you know it, and you get overconfident, right?
That's right. Well, yeah. And I mean, I think it's important for people to recognize or learn from our mistake anyway. In that situation, we already knew the market was receding, if you will. It was going away.
Right.
But it was that idea that, well, it's so clever and there's still so many out there that people will still be willing to invest in a fancy storage device. And it was just not, we just were fooling ourselves.
Right. Because it was happening very quickly.
Yeah, it was. It was. And we saw that, right? We saw how fast the CD-ROM business was coming at us. And then there was already quickly, I think, the next thing that didn't go very well, but there were some other more sophisticated sort of semi-hard drive type things that came out that were not quite a hard drive, but fancier than just a simple disk kind of thing. So yeah, we learned that lesson. That was probably, you know, $50,000, $60,000, $70,000 mistake.
Yeah. Personal business, that's expensive.
Yeah, it was huge for us.
Now, I guess there are still CDs around, right? There's probably not too many. I don't think I have a computer that, I wonder. I guess this one has a drive in it, but my laptops don't.
Most of your laptops now are not.
Well, streaming, it's all in the cloud. What do you need a disk for?
That's right. Yep. Yeah, so that was a mistake. We Ronco was on the product side. I don't know that there was anything that was just really dramatic. Like,
so you ran a parent company that acquired Ronco, right? So there were other businesses you guys owned too.
That's right. As we came out of the CD business, that same group of partners, basically, we knew that it was coming to a close in terms of any real growth potential. There was going to be a latency of opportunity that people just, you know, people get stuck on a particular type of media. I mean, there's certainly people even going back to vinyl, but there was a lot of invested folks with a lot of investment in CDs and CD-ROM. So we knew there was a little bit but the writing was on the wall. So that was when the opportunity with Ronco came along. And really, we were, our passion, that my partners in that business were two retired IBM engineers that came from the mechanical engineering days of IBM before they became a services company. And, you know, back even as far back as the Selectric typewriter, which you're too young to know what a Selectric typewriter
is. You want to hear a funny story? I'm not too young. My dad had him all over his firm and my uncle's law firm. So my daughter is a writer. She's, you know, creative writer, great writer. And she's a senior now, but this is a couple, 3 or 4 years ago. I guess she was in middle school. So she wanted to get a typewriter, so, you know, cause the whole, I want to type, you know, it's like, and they have these mechanical keyboards, right? Cause it feels like typing, but it's not the same thing. So she researches this whole thing on her own. She finds this typewriter. It's like a retro. It was like a turquoise thing, but it was supposed to look like an old, you know, where the keys get stuck on the top.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
So she gets the thing and we're sitting down one time and I'm like, no, that's really nice. I'm proud of you. I mean, it's hard to do those things. I learned on that when I was in eighth grade, you know, you build up your knuckles, but I'm surprised that you didn't want to get like an electric typer. So I think we were eating or something. She drops her fork. She looks at me, she goes, they make electric typewriters. Like she had no idea.
That's
it was
awesome.
Hysterical.
That
and
is
she was
hysterical.
So mad at me for not telling her. You were doing all the research. I figured you knew.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah. The Selectrics had those balls, right? And they would just turn around. Yeah. And I think the first ones they had at the law firms that I worked at, they had that big machine that was connected to the typewriter because it would knock out those punch cards. It was the only
That's
way
right.
you could reproduce a document, right?
That's right. Yeah. That was the fancy.
Yeah.
You know,
right.
The
well,
next,
you know, you were a law firm. You had no other way to produce documents if you had
That's
to write
right.
them again.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
So those guys were, they were brilliant. These were two of actually some of the most prolific inventors at IBM uh-huh. during that time frame. And so that we were product guys. And so when you looked at the Ronco opportunity, what you had was a really big name. You had a really big story, and there was some patents and there was some trademarks.
Pretty well averse in that world, right?
Yeah. So
now was Ronco owned by Ron Popeil at that point, or had it been bought by a bigger company?
No, that was the part we were not savvy about and really, really failed to do our homework on as extensively. We certainly did homework, but not as extensively as we needed to. It had been bought and sold 4 times.
Oh,
I think we were the fifth buyer in a very relatively short amount of time, because when he sold it to a private equity group, and that's
and he
when
stayed
he
on
made,
to run the company. Right?
He stayed on. I think he sold it for $60 million. I think he collected at least $40 million of that. And then they went bankrupt.
Oh, okay.
Because they thought they could, well, they assumed a number of things that weren't really true. It was kind of run into the ground by then. And so they had trouble. That went into bankruptcy. Some guys bought it out of there.
Yeah, so somebody picks up the bones at that point, right?
It just got messy. And by the time we had it, it was really tricky in terms of...
But it still owned the products. It owned patents. It had, right?
Yeah, there was some actual arguments there as well. But anyway, without belaboring it, we got enough of it, and it seemed clear enough that we pushed hard on basically reproductizing that business. And so we are back in our element, right? But what we didn't really
And was Popeil still with the company? Was he still
he
working?
Was not. No,
so
he consulted here and there for various parties that had that acquired it along the way. But yeah, he stepped away from it and immediately started. He went back to literally competing with the business.
Because he had no non-compete at that point.
I don't know who did that deal, but I know you.
So you had a company with a name, but you didn't have the guy.
That's right. That's
okay.
right.
All right.
We got in touch with him right away, and he was actually fairly, yeah. I mean, I don't know that he's ever really easy to work with, but he was a smooth
helpful. Salesman.
Yeah, he's super smooth. I mean, just incredible. Yeah, he never stopped selling really
he's like the Jack LaLanne of sales. I mean,
that's right.
Top 10, he's probably top 5, you know.
Yeah, he couldn't stop himself if he tried.
Right.
So we really worked hard. And I guess the mistake we made ultimately with that, there's many that we made ultimately, big mistakes. One is we never had it capitalized properly. Two, we really did not do our homework. We basically jumped into the appliance business.
Right, that's what they basically said.
We didn't really understand the brick and mortar side of that. Of course, he really made his money prior to when brick and mortar had to be well matched up, carefully matched up with the infomercial side of that business, right? You don't have one without the other in that business. So, we could talk all day about that whole.
Well, when he started, there weren't specialty stores like Williams Sonoma
right.
and stuff like that. There was like Sears. You would go to the department store, right?
Yeah. Well, I mean, there was that. It wasn't as there were opportunities for sure, but what was different then? And it was dramatic. It was by multiple, 10 times, 5 to 10 times. He was the father of the long-term long format infomercial. And At the time he did that, he was paying nothing for airtime.
Yeah.
Nothing.
Right.
So
not like it is now.
He had no competitors. Right. He had in the gosh, you know, the media companies were like, okay, if you want it, but it's really not worth anything.
Right. And it was like middle of the night. It was late weekends, whatever, whenever he could get free time. So he would do it.
That's right.
Yeah.
And so he had huge margins in that business. And so by the time, but especially by the time we bought that business, everybody, even the mainstream brands, were using at times using the longer form and the 2 minute spots. They were, they were all in direct response.
Yeah. It was the margins had shrunk. It was a much competitive, more competitive business.
So you had to make money. You had to make money at retail. You had to, you basically tested on TV, and then if it was doing anything at all, and there was certainly a lot of expertise involved there. But you basically had certain parameters, and you knew, okay, this is going to work, or no, it's not going to work. And we got into it as a, hey, let's make really solid appliances. And what we needed to do, ultimately, one would have argued, is we needed to be good at the infomercial business.
Yeah. Well, because Ronco is more of a gadget company, right?
That's right.
They have things that have cool features and seem to work better and demonstrate well and all that type of stuff.
Big time.
So how many products did you guys bring to market through that company?
Yeah. So in 3 years that I stayed with Ronco in the leadership position there for 3 years until leaving to do OneBlade. And I'm going to say we brought out like 7 really, truly ground up products. I mean, we started from scratch. So we did a brand new rotisserie. We did a brand new dehydrator product. We did, it was all kitchen stuff.
Dehydrators and air fryers, I was telling you, that's like the hot thing right now. You can air fry everything.
Yeah. It's healthy, quote unquote.
It's healthy, obviously. Right. Yeah.
Yeah. So, depends on what you air fry.
My cousin air fried cookies the other day. I was like, I can do air fry cookies. It works. It's hot, you know, gooey on the inside, hot on the outside.
Wow.
Don't spray them with olive oil, but you know.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, air fry
everything. That's funny. Yeah. So, yeah, that business will continue on. People love, I mean, and gosh, now everybody's at home. And so I would imagine that's had a huge impact as well.
Plus with Amazon and it's nuts.
Yeah. Yeah.
Crazy. So, okay. So then what year was that? How long have you been doing OneBlade? A couple of years.
So OneBlade was right at the tail. I left in the summer of 2013 and started OneBlade by right about Thanksgiving of 2013.
Okay. So did your time at, not that it's that relevant, but did your time at Ronco come to an end because you were interested in what you're doing now? Or you were like, you know what, I'm going to take a step back. And then you thought of this later on.
Yeah, I say the honest answer is we were out of capital, and I was tired of being in that sort of rut, if you will. We went too far without raising capital, and then we just couldn't get anything really to make sense to outside investors at that point. It was too far down the path. So for me, it was this came to me literally via a search firm while I was still at Ronco. And it was, it was a dream. So it was a dream job as described anyway. So I couldn't help but not look into it. And then it really did pan out that way as well. So it was an easy decision for me to leave at that point.
So it was a razor company. I thought you started the company.
Yeah. So here's what it was. A gentleman who had an experience,
okay,
and had recognized that, hey, straight razor shaves in a proper barber shop, this one happened to be in Italy by a barber who really knows what they're doing, creates this incredibly close, incredibly skin healthy outcome that he had never experienced before. He has really curly hair. He has a really full beard. Every time he shaved, he had massive razor bumps and ultimately
like
oftentimes ingrown hair.
Right.
And so he, you know, as a result.
And he was just using a multi-blade.
Cartridge.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because like most of the world.
You don't know any better. That's what I do.
You don't know any better.
No idea.
Yeah. So he had that experience and he sat on it for 10 years. He built a really, really big profitable business out on the East Coast and came back to it and said, I really want to see, I want to build something. He was motivated. He has two young guys, two young boys. And they're at that time, gosh, they were like 6 and 8 or so. Okay. He was being very, he liked the idea of doing a really, really high-end product for guys that really celebrated manhood. And he was looking for something too, that he could build and pass on to his sons.
Now, what was he doing before this?
So he is, and was, and still is. And now it's grown even more. So it's probably the biggest financial publishing business in the world now. And it's a company called Stansberry Research,
okay,
based out of Baltimore. And, but they now have a number of different editors or,
but they put out financial information for the financial industry, like advisors. And
that's right. Right. That's right. That's right. So mostly towards, they do have a number of advisors as customers, but they do also do direct to
consumer.
Yeah. Consumers. So it's the millionaire next door guy is kind of how I describe who their main customer is. Right. Yeah.
Yeah.
So basically, Porter came to me via this search firm and said, hey, you've got the product development. He liked my direct response background. And
he was looking for a CEO to run this business.
He's looking for a CEO. And
had he started it? Like, what?
Well, it was, he's, you know, close with, lawyers and different parts of his business. And so he had gone ahead and registered the company, but
right,
that was it. So the trademark process had been initiated. I think maybe not even initiated, but anyway, the company had been registered. It was set up. But
they didn't have a product to sell, right?
It was purely an idea. It was purely this idea that, hey, surely there's a way to take that performance of a single edge, what at that point for him was a straight razor shave, and get that to be similarly friendly, or we use the word forgiving, as a cartridge or a multi-bladed cartridge shave, where in fact it's very, very difficult to cut or nick yourself. Can happen, but with a 5, 6, 7 blade cartridge in a plastic frame with Teflon strips above and below the blades, it's a fairly safe way to scrape hair off your face.
Yeah.
Here's a word from our sponsors. Uplift your marketing and reinforce your brand with a digital business card from Digital Accelerant. Use a text marketing combination to stand out in front of your competition. Digital business cards make you memorable and most of all help you bring in new business through its warm lead generator. Motion graphics, intro, outro, and inspirational videos can be added during setup. Text the word LAW to 21000. That's LAW to 21000 to learn how to get your own digital business card. Suffering from slow internet speed? Worried about hackers? Fetch Pro gets the internet from your smartphone to your Windows and Mac computer without paying for a hotspot. Always get the fastest, most stable, and secure internet access on your computer with Fetch Pro. Follow their affiliate link on our website to learn more and get connected with Fetch. Printify is the online service that simplifies and automates the process of sourcing and creating print-on-demand products branded with your company logo, product, or service. Printify is a better alternative to pre-purchasing and warehousing your merchandise for distribution or sale. Follow their link from our website to learn how to set up your own online store. And be sure to visit our online store and get yourself some podcast merch. Follow the link in the show notes to learn more about all of our sponsors. And now back to our show.
And so he was looking for that solution, but he had gone to, from his experience in Italy, he had toyed around, I think is really the best way to put it, with what we call safety razors or double edge razors.
Okay.
which is what really came after the straight razor and was in vogue, big, you know, was the razor of the day up until probably early 60s.
Is that the one that's like curved on the top? The blade goes, it's a double-sided blade.
So that's right.
You got it. Okay.
That's right.
I think that's what my son uses. Yeah.
Oh, really? Okay.
So yeah. Like Harry's, right? Don't they have a double-edged blade or something?
You could get it at, you can get them in many places. Harry's is selling cartridges. Harry's is big time. They're, you know, Harry's and Dollar Shave were credited as being the disruptors in the industry going back about 4 or 5 years ago. But all they did was come in and disrupt the price point, right? They came after Gillette and Schick and said, hey guys, there's no reason you should be paying this high price. We'll sell you the same cartridge with 5, 6, whatever blades in it.
Right.
And it'll be a lot less, and we'll deliver it to you in a subscription format, which is super convenient.
Right.
No more having.
So he must have gotten his razor somewhere else then, because I've seen that style razor.
It's available a lot of different ways, including a large number of sellers on Amazon. So yeah, so basically that's what was, you know, hey, we want this to be, we want to celebrate men, we want to deliver these really two critical shaving parameters. We want this very close shave, and we want low to no irritation. And so we went off on a quest. I hired a design and engineering firm in New York, a company called Pinza. That was the result of literally two months of just searching for the right partner. We went from there, got them signed up, and we spent about a year, at least a full year, year and a quarter with them to get to the point where we had a design that we were happy with that we could hand off to manufacturers.
So you're prototyping and testing and adjusting and all the whole thing, right?
I've never gone through a project with more prototypes than we did, because this is now well into the heyday of being able to print.
3D print. Now you can, it's a lot easier. Yeah.
So we were printing, we would do a handle study and print 40 handles that were slightly different one from the next, just to see the grip part of it. We spent a lot of time on the balance and the weight of it. What we did was, and it's funny, I talked to Mark at Pinza, one of the owners there, partners there, just the other day. He spoke at the IDSA conference here just about 3 weeks ago. And one of the fun things was he said, he needed some pictures or something, I think is what we were talking about for his presentation. And the fun thing was he was talking about how it's become really recognized in the marketplace, how we should be, I don't know that it's happening on any sort of scale, but how important it is to design products, not so that we can just hit a price point, not so that we can simply make the most money in our business by how long they last and that we get to sell more of them or whatever, but that we make products that have as good of an experience to them and a durability and really just sort of talk to everything that we were about, because that's what we did. I tell this story, and I don't know how people can appreciate this as well as I can, because if you don't work with product developers all the time, it's maybe not as appropriate. But basically, the question they always ask first thing is, hey, how much should it cost?
Right.
Right. How much do you want whatever this widget is that you're telling us you want us to design?
And they back into it. Right.
Right. So they back into it.
Right.
It's very logical.
Yeah. It's like, we can't use that material because there's no way you're going to meet your price point. Right.
That's right. That's right. And so a lot of logic to that. But what we did, not because we were trying to be illogical, what we did was we said, look, we're committed to two things. We need this razor to get us a straight razor in the hands of the most expert barber anywhere, close shave, comfortable, you know, really enjoyable, where you fall asleep in the chair because you quickly realize this guy has it all under control and he's not creating any pain for you. And then it's got to be the outcome, right? It's got to be, I don't have cuts, nicks, razor bumps, ingrown hairs. My face just looks as good as it ever could.
Right.
And so those two things drove our whole process. So every time, and this happened, I can assure you it happened 10 times. It was probably more than that. Mark or someone on his team would go, but how much should it cost?
Right. Well, they're used to doing that. Yeah,
that's right. It's part of their training.
But you're taking the approach, let's build the best product with the best materials, I'm sure within some reason, but still, and then let's figure out how to produce it and get it to the marketplace at an affordable cost.
Yeah. Well, I literally never answered the question. Every time I laugh when they said it, not at them, but I said, look, I know you want to know the answer, but the answer is it has to do these things. So of course we're not asking you to do the, hey, let's make it out of solid gold version.
Right.
But we need to use the materials we need to use. We need to design the product the way we need to design it. And we can't stop the process of design. I mean, we didn't want to wait a year and a half. We didn't go to market. We started the business in November of 2013. We didn't go to market with anything. We weren't selling anything until July 3rd of 2015. So that's a long time to pay me, to pay engineers and designers, et cetera. And by the way, we were also very, very involved the whole time I was doing that. I was also working to explore every potential best performing material that we could come up with to make a special blade for this razor.
Yeah, and that's expensive because you're exploring.
Expensive.
Right.
Yeah,
of course.
We were looking at all kinds of different cool stuff that was very much cutting edge, no pun intended. And there was no manufacturing setup for taking, for example, amorphous metals and making them into blades.
But
we were
bright products.
Yeah, we were certainly doing our best to try to figure that out.
You know, it's interesting how the business has changed because not the shaving business, but I mean the product development business. Now with, I don't know, $1,000, you can get a 3D printer and you can make prototypes, you and a friend in a garage and come up with all kinds of stuff.
It's crazy. When I started, early on coming out of school, and this is back to sort of 1987 timeframe, if you had anything with multiple parts that you wanted to prototype, to any degree of accuracy, you had to think in terms of $10,000-$20,000 to get a prototype made.
Yeah, it's got to be developed on AutoCAD with all the different parts and this and that. And then it's got to go out to manufacturing and who knows what it's being made out of, right?
That's right. So today's setting is, it's just so... it's just totally different. It's not even, you can't really compare it because now you can explore things. You can try things. You can tweak and sort of refine things that you couldn't afford to do earlier on for most of us.
Right. Of course. Or have access to it. It's funny. I watch a lot of like restoration videos and repair things on YouTube and these dioramas and whatever. And they'll come up with something they're repairing or they're fixing and it's missing a piece and they just have it 3D printed.
Yeah, because you can, and then, I mean, once you got into metals, 3D printing metals, it was really a game changer for sure. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Okay, so, but that was back in 15 now. So you came to market in 15.
Right.
With what, one product?
One product. We had one product. It was a $400 price point.
Wow. For a razor?
You're saying that now and people were really saying that back in 2015 because nobody had come into the space. Yeah, it's a car payment.
Well, but you don't throw the handle out, but you got to replace the razors, right?
You needed a blade every three shaves.
Okay.
And, but you had a handle that was solid stainless steel that we guaranteed for life and,
for $400,
really
bucks, I'm sure you would.
Yeah. Oh, of course. Yeah. So, but we made it so that we didn't have any risk in saying that. So it was a product that really, I think, if you were to go ahead, if who knows what we'll be doing in 100 years from now for shaving. I don't know. You'll probably like
walk through a laser and it'll shave your face.
I mean, who knows? It's crazy. Right. Crazy what could be, but if somebody has one of those that they've kept around at all, there's going to be no issue with it shaving just as well in 100 years from now as it does right out of the box.
Now, when you came to market, did you expect, oh, we're going to sell a lot of these, or did you just expect, well, this is only our first edition, we're probably not going to sell that many of it, and we'll get our price point down or something? What was your expectation?
Well, I am an optimist. We didn't talk about that, but
that was that other product where you're people are going to buy.
Yeah, people are going to buy it.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Let me
ask you this question. Was there anything like it in the marketplace at that price point? Anything?
There was one other. Yeah, there's a guy in Tennessee that makes a very fine razor that he does in his garage, that he CNCs in his garage. I think it was a $300 razor. So I think
making them by hand. So he can't mass produce these.
That's right. It was just a take on the traditional safety razor we talked about earlier.
And he probably had a small following, right? Of
that's right.
Aficionados, whatever.
Consumer. I mean, we talk about that segment and we've never really gotten a good sense of the size of it, but we call it the enthusiast shaver.
Right. It's like the beard industry. You got these guys that want beard oil and things like that. You know, now they're into manscaping. I don't know. But so basically you had one guy who was working out of a garage doing custom stuff that had probably a small following. And you're going to come out at like 30 or 40% of his price higher.
Higher. Okay. Yes. And we're going to go to the mainstream guy. We right off the bat had always planned that this was, again, we're serious now. We are out to save that guy like you who hasn't, you know, their grandfather or their father didn't really pass down hey, here's how you shave the proper way.
Right.
Here's how you make great lather by yourself, out of a can.
Nobody was taught anything.
No, you got handed. I mean, most of the time, I don't know if it still happens now, but Gillette used to mail a free razor when you turn 16, 17, 18.
I don't think so.
Yeah. But so anyway, the point is nobody thought about making any kind of investment in a quote handle or the razor itself, if you will.
Right.
That was just a throwaway sort of mindset of, you know, hey, it's going to cost little to nothing. They put one in the package with my cartridges that I pay for.
Right. Just an extra handle.
That's
so
right.
You did your marketing people think you were nuts? You're like, listen, we're going to come out. This is going to be a $400 razor. They're like, what, are you crazy?
Yeah. So the way you preserve your optimism is you make sure you don't have too many marketing people around. So no, we there were two of us, right? So, you know, you can sell each other real easily. And that, I mean, in all seriousness, that's, I think, a challenge for people who are considering entrepreneurial undertakings of whatever sort is. And I tell people this really regularly. My two keys now are you have to pick your partners really, really carefully. And you really need to take yourself seriously enough to put together no matter how informal it is. And hopefully you're not paying them anything, but get some advisors, get some people that aren't sitting in your chair every day. And be willing to let them be honest with you.
Right.
And ask you hard questions. So we kind of surrounded ourselves with the right sort of groupthink and we dove in. We had a huge advantage, and this is what sold me on the opportunity, is that Porter has a book of business that's very, very sizable, and we in his publishing business. And we knew that largely male, slightly older, skewed audience who was traditionally, I mean, typically on average, very wealthy, that by being able to, and we had the advantage of Porter being willing to say, hey, you guys know me, you're spending money with me to get my advice. Hey, my advice, by the way, is advice, you know, I usually talk to you about investments, but you need to buy this razor. And that was very, very, it made sense to me at the beginning, and it paid off for us ultimately. But again, you're talking about an audience of arguably 3 billion people at the very least when you talk about men and the shaving, you know, age around the world. So you're talking about this incredible, huge, huge piece of business, largely owned by Procter & Gamble and the Energizer Corporation. And so that's kind of who we were up against. Our price point was crazy high, as you've already pointed out.
Right.
But even more so than that, that's enough. But on top of that, we were going up against this extraordinarily established trend that was many, 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 you know, decades in the making at this point.
Sure.
Of guys using cartridge razors. So, but that was always our thing. We were out to go and talk to those guys and really rescue them. And that's still what we're up to. We've gotten a little bit better at it. We know a little bit more about how to find them and have a conversation with them.
Is the product still $400?
Our razor is still, if you don't buy a subscription, it's still right. $400 for the stainless steel razor. We did wise up pretty quickly and realized that we needed an entry level product that would get people into what we're arguing is the best way to shave. And so we came up with the one blade core razor, and that razor we now sell between $20 and $25 again, depending on whether you subscribe for blades, and or our lotions and potions, our shaving cream and our aftershave balm. So basically that became our, you know, what we talk about as sort of our gateway drug, right? If we can get that in somebody's hands with a little bit of instruction, we will convert people. We'll get them to realize that, you know, this is the best way to shave. So we did that. And then soon after that, about a year later, we came up with our hybrid razor. And the hybrid razor is a mid-level. It's basically a combination of the two, right? It has a stainless steel head, and then it has a plastic and stainless steel handle.
Okay. And how, I guess you're getting a lot of feedback from customers, testimonials, social media posts, things like that.
Yes. Know that
it's working for them.
Yeah. Thankfully we part of what I still spend time on every week is I'll usually get through, it's usually about 80 reviews, I would say on average a week of
that many.
That's our whole product line, but most of those, many of those will be about our razors. So yes, thankfully, I come away excited, not depressed after I read those. and it's really helpful. It's caused us to, it's our best source of how to move forward with messaging, with advertising, with our education products. I mean, getting guys to read instructions is very, very hard, as everybody's joked about for a long, long time. So we've found different ways to do that. Certainly video is really, really important.
Right. Demonstrating the product. Yep. I watched the video, the animated one.
Oh, good.
It looks good. I don't know. It's all animated. Yeah. Could do anything.
It's animated.
Right?
Yeah. It's about shaving.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. We try. I mean, you can't, it's, what makes the difference for us, we've learned this from the reviews, is it goes back to common sense, as it almost always does, is expectations, right? If I sell you a razor and obviously, I tell you, right? Hey, yeah. Mitch, you know, I'm going to cut your shaving costs in half.
Right.
This is, you got to do it. I'm going to save you half your costs that you're paying now with whatever you're using, your electric razor, your Gillette razor, whatever. When we do things like that, which we have done, because we can argue the savings that people realize with our razor, that really sets the stage often for guys to fail to recognize that what we're also saying is you need to learn how to shave a different way. When we get guys signed up to say, hey, this is why you should learn, but you're going to need to learn, they're already committed to learning. If we hand them the razor and say, look, it's going to save you money, or it's going to, you're going to shave in half the time, that's when we will run into trouble.
Yeah, because they'll start shaving the same way.
I'm going to shave the same way, and they're going to go, no, this is not faster. Or, hey, you know, this is, I do this and this, and therefore I don't think this, you know, necessarily is cheaper. But more importantly, I never really got the benefits of using the razor the way it was supposed to be used in the first place. So whether it's cheaper or not, I don't care because it doesn't work.
Right.
So that's been, I mean, saying it here with you sound makes it sound almost silly to have to say that, but it's huge for us. It's really been a big difference.
Well, that's one of your big selling propositions, right? Is that there's a better way to shave, and it's in the, I watched the video in the design of the product, but also in the use of the product and how you use it. I think the video gets its point across though. I think it addresses the issues. I mean, my biggest problem, and I'm willing to try it. I'm not going with the $400. I'm willing to try the less expensive one, but you know, is that when I have skin that when I shave against the grain, I mean, I might as well peel my skin off my face. Cool. I mean, it's not that bad, but I mean, it's a lot of blood. So I gave it up. And what I do is after it grows in a couple of days, I'll shave in the shower just down with the grain and then clean it up with an electric afterward. And I don't get any cuts then.
Right. Sure. Yeah. Well,
You know, I'm
we'll get you set up and
the excitement of shaving. Now, do you have any salons using this? Any men's? Because there are now these monthly. I'm on one too that I pay a monthly fee. I can go in, haircut, shave. Well, now they're getting back to shaving. They weren't doing it because of coronavirus, but
sure.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, so we're not formally, especially on a chain basis. We've got some barbers out there that love our razor and that are using it. We are working on that, is what I can tell you right now. The barbershop industry is tough because it's very, very fragmented. There are some chains now that are
like Kennedy's and
starting
like
up, but but it's tough because. Some of these really great barbershops, those guys are just renting stalls. They're literally in there.
They're barbers
doing their own. Yeah, they're doing their own thing, and so they don't tend to be very product centric in terms of hey, I can upsell like you see and have seen in salons for a long, long time.
Right.
I don't know if it's more women versus men, but boy, think about. Paul Mitchell and that whole business and what Jean-Paul DiGiorno has done with that, you know, that industry that he's extraordinarily relying upon salons to sell his product.
Well, because they have, because they get the stylist using it. And then people say, here,
that's right.
Where do I get that? Oh, it's right up front on the way out, you know?
So we're anticipating we'll be able to, because what's happening because COVID shut this all down. So who knows what's going to be post COVID or when is post COVID.
I
don't even know.
And it won't be post, it'll be during COVID.
Yeah. It'll be during the new deal, I guess. But really that is, it is a huge opportunity for us because what's happened is especially in the men's side of things, the independent barbershop industry has really gone crazy over the last 3 or 4 or 5 years. And there's so many more of them out there. The challenge is learning how to shave with a straight razor is it's an art. It's an art, and it's an art that takes a lot of hours of practice to really get great at. And when you're just good at it, you don't want to go to that barber and get him with a straight razor on your face. I mean, they don't know what they're doing. I can just tell when someone shaves my neck after a haircut with a
straight razor. Yeah, the back, razor. I get that too. Yeah, the back of your head and around some your ears and stuff. Yeah.
Yeah. Some of them feel like they're peeling your skin off and some of them feel like they know what they're doing. But so the point of all that is we do hope to do something there soon. There's a lot of those barbers now who are actually using cartridge razors. So they're charging you to give you a cartridge razor shave, basically.
Right.
You may not even know it. There's the famous barbershop in New Orleans that does that, and you don't know. You're almost prone. You've got towels all over your face, hot towels, which feels great. You have no idea what's happening really, or what tool they're using on your face because you can't see.
Right. Maybe you need to create like the Paul Mitchell Academy, the One Blade Academy.
That's right.
Barbers will come and learn. It's funny, the girl.
Yeah.
So it's funny you say women. So I go to a men's salon. It's called President's Barber Club. It's one location.
Sure. Yep.
They used to be with Kennedy's. They went out and started their own thing. And it's two women that own it. I know she uses a straight razor because I see her unwrap the blade every time with the paper. I don't know what she puts it in. I guess some sort of a handle.
Yeah, they call it a shavette or but it is still, it's essentially, it is a straight razor. They can't legally use a straight razor on you because I don't know who decided. Yeah. I mean, it could be sterilized. I don't know why they don't let them do it, but basically they've got to put a new blade and a shavette every time and use that. So
how many units have you sold since you got started? Do you know?
Oh boy. I should know the answer to that question. I can tell you we're on track. Next year we'll be in the millions of blades, sold for sure, in the year. We are right now we're on track to double our revenues this year over last, which is extraordinary for us. We've been growing all along, but never at this pace.
Okay.
So we're really excited in spite of the craziness of our world and marketplace to be growing at this pace. We expect to sell, we'll bring in probably a little over 30,000 new customers this year alone.
Who buy the handle and then become
customers buying
the blades, right?
That's right, yeah.
All right, so if somebody wants to learn more about the product and get it, they just go to oneblade.com?
One Blade Shave or One Blade Razor. Actually, you know, both those will work. So, just head to oneblade.shave.com, oneblade.razor.com, and you'll see our product line there and a lot of content on how to do it. We're also excited, by the way, to be this holiday. We're going to be launching in context with giving this best possible shaving experience. We're going to be launching our newest product, which we've been working on for over a year now, which is our hot lather machine.
I've had them at barbershops.
Yeah, you get them at the barbershop, It's a really nice feeling when you get that nice warm lather on your face or your neck, whatever's getting shaved. And yet those machines go back to probably 1950s.
Oh, they've
in terms
never really
of the design, they've never been, nobody's done anything there. And so it was a huge opportunity for us to be able to bring that experience home. We see this machine actually ending up in barbershops as well, because what's unique about it is it takes up the footprint and is exactly really the same size as a nice large coffee tumbler. So if you have a double insulated stainless steel Yeti or some other brand of coffee mug, basically it's going to be like setting a coffee mug like that on your counter. It's a 12-volt system, so you don't have any shock issue around being around the sink. Those other machines are all 120.
Right.
Definitely.
They're bigger. I've seen them.
They're big. They're huge.
Yeah.
And frankly, I won't scare you too much, but let's just say there's a lot of work involved in actually keeping them hygienic. And so we spent a lot of time on our machine just focused on just that one issue of how do we. You're talking about a very, very warm environment with moisture involved. So, right, it's a perfect way to grow things.
Yeah.
So we've worked hard both on the machine side and on our formulation for our solution to make sure that we're really giving people the healthiest natural product on their face or on their skin possible. So we're excited about that. And that's going to be a product that gets us we hope it's not this way long, but we certainly, for the guy who continues to want to use his cartridge razor, still great to have a hot lather, every time you shave. It's super fast and it feels great. And it's just really super easy to use. So we're excited about that. And then we also see an opportunity to start soon. We're going to start talking to women about shaving. So that's something coming up.
Okay, so you make a one blade for women, a pink
one. That's right. Yeah. Well, we hear that that's not a necessarily you and I would might.
No, I'm just saying that's
yeah.
for women.
Yeah.
So. Yeah. I don't know if it'll be pink, but yeah.
Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. Maybe purple or.
Maybe purple, maybe turquoise, green, but yeah. Like so
different,
choices. But really looking at, you know, how do we, cause we haven't, we'd want to step
I think
back
women
and
have
go,
the same
okay.
problem just with their legs.
That's right.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah. So we want to get more educated on that. We want to be thoughtful about it. And we want to not try to, I'm really a proponent of making sure that we don't just take a product and decide it probably is good for somebody else or another group of folks.
Just because you developed this product for men doesn't mean it's going to work on women.
Yeah.
Right. Because you're also, you know, you're not up by your face. You're down here. It's a different. Yeah. Interesting.
Yeah.
You really made a science out of shaving your face. That's for sure.
We made a science out of it, but we also are hopefully able to help our customers just have a really pleasant, simple experience.
Well, on that note, Todd, I appreciate you coming on and sharing your story and your background and everything like that. We will put the links to OneBlade and everything in the show notes, including the YouTube video, so people can understand it and watch for it at the holiday times with whatever comes out. I would assume it's a good holiday gift, right?
We love holiday time. And yes, we see a huge increase in guys buying it for themselves as their Christmas present. And then we're probably talking 70-80% of the time in that time frame, we're talking to women and they are, it's
gifts
it's
for men.
Gifts for dad, gifts for husbands, boyfriends.
Yeah, men are hard to buy for.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
This way, the way we are.
So with us, 60-day money back guarantee and all the commitment that we make on our side, it's really an easy choice.
All right. Well, Todd, I appreciate coming on. And
if you like the podcast, please tell others about us. You can find us on Apple Podcasts, on Google Podcasts, on Amazon Music, and many of the other podcast directories. If you like what you hear, please leave us a 5-star review and feel free to share our episodes on social media. If you have any questions or comments, ideas for the show, or you'd even like to appear as a guest, reach out to us by email at info@beinhackerlaw.com. The Accidental Entrepreneur is hosted and produced by me, Mitch Beinhacker. If you'd like more information about my legal services, you can find me on social media or visit my website at beinhackerlaw.com. Thanks for listening, and be sure to subscribe to our feed to be notified of all future episodes.